Our next case for argument is 23-1523, Lessers v. Defense. Mr. Perdue, whenever you're ready, please begin.
May it please the Court, William Perdue on behalf of the Lessers. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. At great personal risk, the Lessers signed contracts leasing their ancestral land to the U.S. government. In rejecting the Lessers' claims for unpaid rent, the Board reasoned on summary judgment that the Lessers cannot possibly prove that they own the land. But in 2021, the Afghan Land Court definitively held that the Lessers do own the land. At the outset today, I'd like to focus on why that 2021 decision is entitled to recognition. Because if this Court recognizes the 2021 decision, then the other issues in this case, including intent to contract and the active state doctrine, get much simpler. So turning to recognition, the only basis for not recognizing the 2021 decision that the government defends on appeal is supposed doubt about the land court's integrity under Section 484G of the restatement. That provision clearly does not apply here. As the restatement explains in comment I, Section 484G, quote, requires...
Counsel, my understanding is the government of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan no longer exists, right? Okay. So what effect, if any, does that have on our active state doctrine analysis here?
So I don't think you need to get to that if you recognize the 2021 decision, but I'm happy to answer the question. So I think that supports our position that the active state doctrine does not apply. The Supreme Court's leading exposition of the active state doctrine in Sabatino says that the active state doctrine is a judge-made federal common law rule that only applies when its purposes are being served in a given case. One instance in which the doctrine's purposes would not be served is when the relevant sovereign no longer exists. That gives you a reason not to need to defer to that sovereign's sovereign acts. But you don't need to get to that if you recognize the 2021 decision. As I was saying, that the only provision the government invokes is Section 44G, which requires a showing of corruption in the particular case with respect to the particular proceeding. For example, bribery of the judge may justify non-recognition.
Why do you think that we don't need to reach it if we recognize the 2021 decision? And I ask because the board decided this case on two bases. One was active state, and the other was, I think, the interpretation of the 218 decision, and I feel like the 2021 decision only has the capacity to potentially wipe out that issue, which is the board's interpretation of the 2018 decision. I don't understand how the 2021 decision has the ability to wipe out the separate and independent active state issue.
Certainly.
Explain how that weaves together for me.
Absolutely. So the board did decide this case on two independent grounds. One was that there was no intent to contract because the Lessers don't own the land. If you recognize the 2021 decision, that conclusively establishes that we own the land. So that takes care of that ground of the decision. The other ground is the active state doctrine. So the reason the 2020...
When did the defense minister make his proclamation? What was it?
2017 and 2018. And the timeline here is important. So,
but he made a proclamation that the government owns the land.
That is not what the declarations say. Whatever the declarations say, they cannot possibly mean that the Lessers do not own the land, because several years later, in 2021, the Afghan Land Court held definitively that the Lessers do own the land. So in other words...
Okay, that's a little bit challenging for me. I find this case to be quite tricky. A government that's no longer in power asserts that they own a land. A land court, a few years later, when there's a different government in power, says they didn't own the land. Why don't I look at the declaration by the minister at the time he was in power as effectively a taking? Regardless of who technically owned the land, what he was doing is declaring that the government is usurping this property for purposes of allowing the U.S. military to remain on it.
So I think there's a
because that feels like an act of state to me.
So there's a
taking feels like an act of state. Is that right?
A taking could be an act of state, but this was not a taking, and there's a critical timing assumption in your question that I want to correct, which is that the 2021 decision happened when the Afghan Republic was still in power. That is a decision by a court of the Afghan Republic. So it's the same government that issued the 2021 decision.
Okay, but it kind of doesn't matter. I mean, if it was a taking, does it really matter? I mean, I don't.
I think the 2021 decision shows that it was not a taking because the 2021 decision definitively holds that my clients, the lessors, own the land. It can't have been taken from them if they own it.
No, of course it can be taken from them if they own it. What do you mean?
Governments
can do temporary takings all the time.
If this was a temporary taking, and there's been no suggestion in the board's decision that this was a temporary taking, that would merely go to the amount of damages, and the proper disposition by this court would be to reverse and remand, and for this to go back down. I think that the 2021 decision shows that there is nothing inconsistent between the declarations and our claims.
Well, it's not there's nothing inconsistent. Of course there's something inconsistent. The declaration says that they own the land, and the 2021 decision says, no, you didn't. So of course there's inconsistency. I think what you're saying is the 2021 decision sort of overrules the declaration.
I think you can look at it either way. We do not believe there is anything inconsistent, but if you believe that the 2021 decision overruled the 2018 decisions, then the 2017 and 2018 declarations, then they've been wiped off the books, and there's nothing inconsistent with our claims today with those declarations if they've been invalid. Sorry.
Counsel, even if we find the 2021 decision is not entitled to recognition, is it your position that that decision would raise genuine issues of material fact?
Absolutely. So you can recognize it as a court decision under the restatement principles. As I was explaining, the board misapplied those principles. I think you could also just look at it as a piece of evidence. In Afghanistan, the courts are not just courts, they are also the recorder of deeds, and thus the 2021 decision.
You are wading into a territory which is an appellate court. I feel very uncomfortable. You're asking me to basically make weird fact findings about another country's property and governmental regime. I feel like if that's necessary, that's a vacate and remand for a fact finder to do that. That doesn't feel like something I should be doing.
We would be happy with a vacate and remand, Your Honor, obviously. And I think it's important to remember that the government raised non-recognition and the government moved for summary judgment. So they need to meet all of their burdens as a matter of law on the current record. If there's any question about whether the current record is sufficient, then the proper disposition is to vacate and remand. And I think you can do that through recognition principles or just through treating the 2021 decision as effectively another deed. It's just another piece of evidence of ownership that raises a genuine issue of fact about who owns this land.
To follow up on Judge Cunningham's earlier question regarding this government is no longer in existence. So I'm trying to wrap my head around how we deal with the act of state doctrine. I know you said we don't have to get there, but if we do, I still struggle with that. They're not there in power anymore. Everyone that was involved in this case.
I think that's another reason not to apply the act of state doctrine in this case. The act of state doctrine is an affirmative defense. The government is the party that's asserting that defense. They bear the burden to establish all of the elements of the defense. And they have three elements they have to show. They have to show an official sovereign act. They have to show that official sovereign act is inconsistent with some necessary element of our claim. And they have to show that applying the act of state doctrine in this case would further the purposes that the act of state doctrine is designed to further. That is part of their burden,
And you're arguing the third one's not met here because it doesn't further the purpose because
that, we argue all three. They have not met any of them. But the issue of the relevant sovereign no longer existing goes to the third piece of their burden. And Sabatino discusses this expressly. It expressly mentions the possibility of a sovereign that is no longer extant.
So, counsel, assume that we do not give the 2021 decision recognition and we want to rule as narrowly as possible. Can you describe to me what you believe would be all the issues we'd have to address in that context?
So I think on intent of contract, it's very simple. The only basis on which the board suggested that there isn't an intent to contract is that we don't own the land. The 2021 decision is evidence that we do own the land. It, at a bare minimum, raises a material fact about whether we own the land. So that takes care of intent to contract. Then the other issue is the active state. I think if there is a question about whether we own the land, I mean, the board emphasized that all parts of this case, intent to contract and the active state doctrine, ultimately come down to who owns this land. And so if there's material disputes of fact about who owns the land, then there's material disputes of fact such that the government can't meet its burden under the active state doctrine either. I think you could also add something about the fact that the relevant sovereign does not exist. That's another further reason why the active state doctrine would not apply here and that the government hasn't met its burden. But I think that would be sufficient, and this court could remand on that basis.
The 2017-2018 declarations, you consider those to be sovereign acts?
We do not believe they are sovereign acts.
So what are they? Because ultimately they built a military base on this land.
Yes. Well,
you get more sovereign than putting a military base.
So the relevant act is not the act of putting the military base there. The relevant act is issuing these declarations. And these are declarations, these are unilateral acts by the Afghan Ministry of Defense. The Ministry of Defense has no authority to alter Afghan property law or to take away our contract rights. So the declarations do as much as the Afghan military, Afghan MOD is authorized to do, which is to promise indemnification. They basically tell the U.S. government, you can use this land, and if somebody sues you, we will make you whole. And I think the U.S. government understood at the time that the declarations did not erase our contract rights. There are emails from U.S. real estate officers that say that the declarations have, quote, no value, and that notwithstanding the declarations, the U.S. government may still be liable for, quote, $24 million in rent. That's Appendix 1319 and 1352. So, fundamentally, this is a commercial act. It is a promise of indemnification where the declarations may alter the rights and obligations as between the U.S. government and the Afghan government, but they do not change anything between the lessors and the U.S. government. The lessors still have a contract that entitles them to rent, and that hasn't changed.
You want to save the rest for rebuttal?
I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it Mr. Schiavetti?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. When the lawful pre-Taliban Afghanistan government declared to the United States, in connection with the sovereign nation's bilateral security agreement, that the Afghan government owned the land at issue in this case, that the United States was entitled to use it, and that any claims regarding that land would be submitted to and resolved by the government of Afghanistan, that was a sovereign act that is not reviewable in this court or by the ASBCA, and that prevents recovery by the appellants in this case.
But is that a sovereign act, or is it just covenants?
It was a sovereign act, Your Honor, because, again, my friend just mentioned that he tries to limit the ability, the scope of the declarations to what the Minister of Defense can do, but he neglects to mention that the bilateral security agreement, which is clearly my friend relies upon that in their brief for the treaty exception. It has the force of a treaty, and that treaty, that bilateral security agreement, expressly delegates to the Minister of Defense the ability to add additional areas to the terms of the bilateral security agreement. So those declarations have the force of the bilateral security agreement. They are essentially addenda adding additional land to that and really clarifying, because the bilateral security agreement from the outset included Fobshank because it mentioned other areas of which the United States has use, which it did at the time that bilateral security agreement was finalized, although it was turned over in the weeks after that to the Afghan government.
Now, let me just jump to kind of the end of that three-part that you have to prove for the active state, which, you know, has to do with applying it in this case. And
if I might take issue with the three parts, but please ask your question first.
Thank you. So what do we do with the fact that the sovereign no longer exists? Are we really, is there really an effectuation of the purposefulness and the act of the state when the sovereign doesn't exist anymore?
Sure, and if I may address that by first saying that the idea that there are three factors is incorrect on the active state doctrine. There are two factors that need to be addressed. This part is one of the additional factors that's frequently referred to as the Sabatino factors. Numerous courts have found that the Sabatino factors need not be addressed when the first two factors, which is the actual factors of the active state doctrine, when those apply, there's no need to get to this third factor at all. So that's the our first answer to that question. But if the court does find that it needs to look at the additional Sabatino factors, which it should not, because the active state doctrine applies on its own terms, the government of Afghanistan that the United States recognizes is the government that issued these declarations. The government of the United States does not recognize the Taliban as the lawful government of Afghanistan. So although the facts on the ground may be that this government no longer is physically in charge of the nation of Afghanistan, there is no case law that appellants have pointed to where an unrecognized government has deposed them by force and therefore created liability for the United States by deposing the government by force.
I'm confused. If the government no longer exists, how can that Sabatino factor be effectuated?
Well, that's one consideration that Sabatino said should be looked to. Does the fact that the government no longer exists undermine the rationale for applying it in the first place? But that rationale, of course, applies, because in the dealings with the United States, particularly the United States military, with foreign nations in which we might want to cite military bases, can be subject to the outcome of the military conflict. Maybe there will be less incentive to ex ante to make certain agreements or less binding nature, or the United States would be less inclined to accept any promises made by a government that may or may not exist depending on the outcome of the hostilities. So in this particular case, that absolutely still applies the same way, even if the court were to look to that Sabatino factor, because ex ante, when the government, United States government, is negotiating with the government of a foreign country in which military operations are ongoing, it needs to trust that that act of state will be trusted by U.S. courts, even if the military conflict doesn't go the way the United States
would. What is the actual act of state? Is it the declaration? Is it the statement? Is it the waiver of future remuneration? What is precisely the act that the minister or the government took that you think amounts to the act?
The act of state is declaring that the government owns the land. So as you pointed out, it can be an expropriation if, in fact, the lessors own the land. The government of Afghanistan's position and our position is that the lessors never owned the land in the first place.
Then
the
why'd
government
you pay
always
rent?
Owned the land.
Then why'd you pay them rent for a year?
There are some in
that
the record.
That seems like a problem for me. I mean, my government recognized them as the property owners and paid them rent for a year, and I've seen no evidence in this record or otherwise that you've now concluded that was improper.
Well, that's not the case, Your Honor. There is evidence in the record. The 2010 letter from the Corps of Engineers stating that the lessor's claim to property ownership was in question and that they would have to justify their ownership or else potentially have to repay the lease rent that was paid for 2009. So there was some effort to do that. There's some indication in the record, and it's unfortunately not in the joint appendix, I'm not entirely sure why, but it is in the record, was attached to the government SIR reply before the board. There's a declaration there that explains some of those, side reasons for why things happened the way they did. I can get into that if you like, and in fact, I have a copy of the declaration if you'd like to see it.
But what do you make of the fact that you have how many different court cases in Afghanistan say the lessors own the property, right? You've got like 2018, 2021, so you've got
2018 did not say that, Your Honor. So the Supreme Court of Afghanistan, which is the Supreme Court...
Yeah, they didn't say the lessors owned the property, fair enough, but they also didn't say the government owned the property. In 2018, it was a vacate and remand. You're not going to convince me otherwise, so skip that argument if you're going to try and make it.
No, that's not the argument I was going to try to make, Your Honor, but they certainly definitively held that the evidence on which the lessors rely to state that they own the land did not show that they own the land. And it's exactly the same evidence that then a lower court came to an opposite conclusion without really addressing anything that the Supreme Court of Afghanistan had said in terms of pointing out potential fraud, pointing out that these water rights were not nearly comprehensive enough to cover the entirety of the land, pointing out various other irregularities, the non-cultivable cultivable nature of the land, the fact that the Taliban government previous to the government of Afghanistan...
But all that resulted in was a vacate and remand. It did not result in any adjudication that they don't own the land. So why aren't there questions of fact, at least created by the combination of both 2018, 2021, that questions of fact about who owns the land, such that at least the first of the two separate and independent bases upon which the board concluded this case in favor of the government is subject to questions of fact that need to go back.
Well,
I mean, I understand there's a second independent one. Just put it to the side for me.
Sure.
Focus on the first one.
Yes. So aside from the fact that the active state doctrine ends the case, the last statement from Afghan courts that are entitled to any recognition in the United States courts is from the Afghan Supreme Court, which pretty definitively said that none of the evidence, which is the same evidence that appellants continue to rely on to establish that they own the land, that it did not establish that
they own the land. Can you actually show me where that is? Because my clerk, who's really good, says the 2018 decision said the maiden decision did not consider certain arguments made by the Afghan government. It did not say the lesser's proof was definitively insufficient. So that's her read of it. So why don't you show me where she's wrong?
Well, 2012-21 is where that decision is located, Appendix 1221.
Hopefully this is the English version, because I can't read the
other one. I believe so, yes.
All right. 1221
is the English translation.
Because it was very helpful when you gave us the other ones.
Oh, I'm sorry. I pointed you to the wrong page.
No, it's the 2018.
That's the 2018 declaration. Yeah. I saw 2018 and I got ahead of myself. I apologize. It's in several places here,
but
890 is one.
1240.
Sure.
I think it's 1240.
It is in here a few times. And actually, the one with my annotation, so it'll help me point you to the right place, is at 972. Over there.
So what do you want me to look at so that I can understand precisely where your argument is grounded?
Yes, Your Honor. So the decision of the Commission starts on page 978. It's correct that the third paragraph from the bottom states that the civil and public rights duan of the Court of Appeal in Maidan Wardak has not considered the forgery claim made by the legal representative. The next paragraph, however, states, the handwritten version of the above-mentioned deed differs from its preceding and succeeding deeds, but the competent court has failed to take this matter into consideration. So it found the fact that the handwriting differs, so it didn't find necessarily that there was a forgery, but it found that the handwriting is different here. It further states on 979, the paragraph that follows the number 5. It's only reasonable to conclude that water rights land is 14 days and that the courts have been oblivious to that matter. So although certainly the decision states that further investigation is needed, it raised a lot of very damning questions for the appellant state.
In the same paragraph that you just cited that you say is so damning, if it's so damning, why would they say it warrants further investigation?
Well, again, I concede that it warrants further investigation, but they made findings.
It's not, quote, so damning if it warrants further. This is not a finding. If this Supreme Court is not saying we find, but rather we have some concerns that warrant further investigation.
Right.
Doesn't feel like a finding to me. It feels like a vacate and remand for further investigation.
It certainly is that. Don't dispute that it's a vacate and remand. And of course, the 2021 decision, as the board found, did not address many of these issues that the Supreme Court raised, which is another fatal flaw in that, in addition to the fact that there are a variety of procedural issues.
But that all was just great fact. that doesn't help you. All that does is create fact. I mean, it doesn't hurt you because you might have to go back and relitigate it on vacate remand. It doesn't mean they win, but it all creates more fact.
Potentially, but of course, the active state doctrine doesn't require any findings of
that. You want to go back to that now. Go back to that. That's good.
Well, before you do that, can I ask, how does the loan ownership or the land ownership even go to the issue of breach of contract?
Well, if they don't own the land, then there can be no contract. There's no mutual intent to contract. There's no consideration.
Well, the only case cited was that Thai case. And it doesn't stand for the proposition of that. I mean, it's not the elements of breach of contract in terms of home ownership or owning the land.
That's correct, Your Honor, but if there's no land ownership, then the contract really is probably the correct analysis is that it's void ab initio. They're represented in the contract that they own the land, but there is nothing that there's no consideration that they're providing. There can be no mutual intent to contract for something that they don't own in the first place. There can be no intent for the government to contract with someone who doesn't actually own what they're representing that they're leasing to us. So that's why there's an issue.
Would you agree with me, though, that the case cited in the decision, the Thai High case, doesn't stand for that proposition?
I agree with that, Your Honor. I've reviewed that case. I don't think it stands for that proposition.
But, so, counsel, if we were to rule in favor of the appellant here, what sort of potential defenses could you raise on a potential vacating remand? So a follow-up question I have is wanting to talk a little bit about espousal. I saw some arguments raised in that regard, and I was wondering whether or not that would be something you contend would be open on a vacating remand.
Well, the court, I believe, to the extent that the court decides to remand, it should leave that question open for the board to explain a little further. But the board did address that issue. My friend cites Chenery in their brief, which is inapplicable for a variety of reasons. However, the board did precisely address the issue of waiver and extinguishment of claims, although it didn't use the terms espousal and extinguishment. It talked about the waiver of those claims in the sovereign act of the Afghan government accepting those claims for its own resolution, which it stated that any and all claims made against the Camp Dalkhan Falbshank base or regarding the ownership of this land are the responsibility of the government of the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan and should be resolved in full by the Jarrah. And then a similar language in the 2018 declaration. So the government of Afghanistan accepted those claims for itself and told the United States government, you will not have to resolve any of the claims. We will resolve those claims ourselves. And in fact, they were doing such things in their own court system, totally consistently with the declarations and the bilateral security agreement.
Okay, I have one more question before you go.
Yes, Your Honor.
The board made some issue preclusion statements about the 2018 decision. How might they help you?
They don't, Your Honor. They were not a final decision.
That was meant to be a softball.
The 2018 decision is not final, so the issue preclusion does not.
Doesn't apply. Okay. No, thank you for your honesty. That was great. All right. Now you have some rebuttal time. Yep, give us 3 minutes. Yep.
Thank you, Your Honor. A few points. So first of all, Judge Bazan, I agree that we do not need to prove ownership. If we have written contracts, they overstayed the lease and they didn't pay rent. It's property law 101. That's a breach of contract right there. They want to raise lack of consideration or they want to enforce the covenant of ownership in the lease agreements. They need to prove lack of ownership. That's their burden. They have no evidence in their favor that we don't own the land. But if we do own the land, it answers all the questions. It answers the question about intent to contract and the basic analysis under the active state doctrine too was that the idea was that the issue here is ownership. And if there's a question,
I don't know
about
if it resolves the active state doctrine, but it probably gets you past this stage.
I'm happy for this court to rule that much. We're happy for a vacate and remand. There was some suggestion from my friend that even if the declarations didn't take the physical land, they took our intangible claims for unpaid rent from the U.S. government, and then that's the relevant active state. We do not understand that to be the way the board reasoned about this case, and Regardless, if that's the relevant act, that's not an active state, because the active state doctrine only applies to sovereign acts within, exactly.
And that would be here in the U.S.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better. The last thing, oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know if you want to do your last thing and let me go, or?
I'll do my last thing and maybe it'll answer your question.
Okay, let's hope.
There were a number of statements about the bilateral security agreement. I don't think that helps the government's active state doctrine argument either, for a couple reasons. The 2014 bilateral security agreement clearly can't mean that the lessors don't own the land, because many years later, the 2021 decision says we do own the land. The BSA also does not change Afghan property law. It actually says that it is subject to Afghan law. It doesn't waive any contract claims. To the contrary, it says...
Can I ask you a question?
No.
Okay, let's stop talking. Let her ask her question.
I think you don't. You're at least arguing also that you don't need to prove that you own the land, but it's sufficient that if there are genuine issues of material fact with respect to your ownership, you would then win. Is that true or is that not true?
Both of those things are true. So I think you can, either one is sufficient for us. It's our view is that we do not have the burden to prove ownership. It's the government's, if the government wants to raise lack of ownership, they need to prove that we don't own the land. They have no evidence to support them. But even if you think that we have that burden, we've at a minimum produced evidence that, that raises a material question of fact.
You have more?
No, I'm good. Okay, I want to thank both counsel. You did an excellent job, both of you, with really tough issues and a lot of difficult facts. So thank you both.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.